Thanks, Miriam. And before I begin, I want to thank the APHA for the opportunity to speak about this important issue. Laboratory research safety is becoming a very important topic, certainly to me as director of the Office of Environment, Health, and Safety for UCLA. I'm going to be really speaking about the Center for Laboratory Safety, which was recently formed. I'm the executive director and founder of the Center for Laboratory Safety. I'm going to talk a little bit about how that was formed, but really more I'm going to really focus on the workshop and some of the outcomes of that workshop. The UC Center for Laboratory Safety was actually formed as a result of a tragic fatal accident that occurred at UCLA. I don't know if all of you are familiar with that, but more than 3 years ago, there was a research associate who was working with a pyrophoric material, and that somehow got splashed onto her, and she, as a result of that exposure, she was severely burned. And she died subsequently to her injuries. That accident really had a huge impact at UCLA and certainly in the research community in general. And there were a lot of actions and new procedures and improvements to what we were doing that took place. And during the course of implementation of those programs, we had actually developed a policy on PPE. And as I was going through talking to the faculty about the PPE compliance requirements, I remember meeting with the School of Medicine faculty, and it was all the department chairs of the School of Medicine. It's a pretty large department. And I remember thinking, going into this is going to be a routine meeting, and I'm going to basically talk about the requirements, and you know, it's basically going to be relatively brief and informal, and I'm just going to talk to them. Well, it turned into kind of an interesting discussion. There was a lot of resistance to it. There was a lot of really good questions, but a lot of questions that sort of went against conventional wisdom. You know, primarily we were looking at implementing some minimum requirements with regard to PPE compliance, so with laboratory coats, eye protection, gloves, that kind of thing, minimum requirements of wearing long pants and closed-toed shoes, things that pretty much are accepted common sense when it comes to safe practices in laboratories. We wanted to make sure that it was codified, that it was actually put down on paper, and so that we could then go ahead and hold the laboratories accountable for this. Often, many of our researchers walked into the laboratories in flip-flops and shorts, and certainly in the case of the tragic accident, there was no lab coat being worn. So we wanted to certainly prevent that from happening. Well, I'm in this meeting talking to these very bright people, all these department chairs with many, many years of experience and responsible for large numbers of researchers. And there was a lot of resistance to the concept of making people do this. And what was interesting about it was, and these are all smart people and they're all scientists and they all have a sort of a way of looking at things very objectively and in an empirical way, they started asking me questions about, how do you know that this is actually going to protect our researchers? How do you know this is not going, you know, this is not going to create more problems? And they were giving examples about the lab coats and how the sleeves, many of these were, you know, biologists, not necessarily chemists, but they were concerned about the contamination of their experiments with the sleeves, you know, contaminating the plates, and whether or not there was any proof that this PPE would actually do anything to protect the health and safety of the researchers. And I was really not prepared for this grilling. It was actually a grilling, and it was pretty interesting, actually. And so I didn't have answers for them. They wanted me to provide them with studies, empirical studies, on the research that had gone into determination of whether this PPE actually worked in preventing injuries. And I certainly wasn't prepared to give them references at that point. I wasn't expecting those kinds of questions. Again, this is something that we all believed was something that, through conventional wisdom, actually was effective. What I told them, I would go back and research this. But meanwhile, if any of them had any concerns, specific concerns, I'd ask and encourage them to send me an email with their concerns. And some of the comments were kind of silly, and I knew that I wouldn't get a single one, and I didn't get a single one. No one wants to go on record opposing this. But they did have some legitimate questions, and so I went back to my office and actually started doing the research, and there wasn't very much out there. There was very little research that's published. I'm sure there's been studies, and I'm sure NIOSH has data out there, and I'm sure others have done studies, but there isn't anything published, or very little published. And so that got me to thinking about how could we affect change and change behaviors, because we've got scientists here, and scientists really react and respond to science. They want data, they want empirical studies, they want someone to show them that this is actually working. They don't want just to tell them it's common sense. And so this coupled with the chancellor, our chancellor has been very engaged in this process from the very beginning. And he had challenged us and challenged me and challenged my office to become best in class when it comes to laboratory safety. And so one of the things that I thought is, after doing this research, was how could we really change behaviors if we don't have the science behind it? And so I got to thinking about, well, maybe we could do research into this and we can actually answer some of the questions that were being posed by the researchers at the School of Medicine meeting. And I went out on the internet again and I looked and see if there was any kind of entity that was actually doing this kind of research. And again, there wasn't anything. And so I thought, well, maybe we could actually start some kind of research entity to do that, to actually do research into laboratory safety. And so I pitched that to a number of people, including there was a National Academy of Sciences meeting, and I met with some of the folks there and talked to them about this, and they thought it was a great idea. There wasn't anything, it was a very novel idea in their mind. I talked to the National Science Foundation. I talked to a lot of folks about this, and everyone agreed that it was a great idea. So we were able to get funding from our chancellor. Primarily funding is actually from UCLA. Our chancellor's office funded this. And we also got some funding from the Office of the President from the UC system. So we started a center, it's called the UC Center for Laboratory Safety. And the mission is a tripartite mission. It's to support and sponsor research into laboratory safety. That's the fundamental. Develop best practices, and to facilitate implementation of these practices. The advisory board member, since this is really a research-focused advisory board, the advisory board is actually made up primarily of PIs, actually researchers. It's also made up of a couple of EH&S folks, including myself, and also someone from the National Labs. We also have one person from private industry on the board. We're looking to expand that to get other folks from private industry on board. We're also looking to get more folks in the National Labs. They do some really good work, and so we're hoping to partner with them, particularly Sandia National Labs. They're very, very interested in this, and so we're looking forward to having those partnerships with them as well. So one of the first things that we did, and aside from actually coming up with the bylaws and getting the advisory board members together, we developed a website. We actually thought one of the best ways to do this is to get ideas from other folks, not just this insular group from UCLA that's primarily on the advisory board. We wanted to get researchers from across the country to come and talk about what they thought the key needs were and the key issues were with regards to research safety. So we developed a workshop, and this was an active workshop where we were really soliciting ideas, and we wanted to come up with plans for the future. So that workshop was held earlier this year in March 15th through 16th. Miriam was there. And we had a number of folks from all over the country there. There were 72 participants. The vast majority of them were actually researchers. If you look at the green piece of the pie, that is actually the PIs. 32% of the people that were participating were actually PIs, which is really a challenge to get those folks to come. And we're really thrilled that they actually did come. A large percentage of the other folks were either students, researchers from national labs, researchers from governmental agencies. We had public health laboratories represented. And the blue box, which is the next largest percentage, was actually H&S safety types like myself. So we had a really diverse group, and that was one of the strengths of this conference. And we got really good feedback from all the participants about how this is really unheard of to have all of these people come together to really talk about these issues. And that's why that was one of the main strengths of this conference. So there were four breakout sessions. They were divided into four groups. One was on safety culture, and that was the one that was the most popular. Then there were chemical and other hazards. We focused on chemical hazards. We also looked at other hazards as well. Safety compliance was a big issue, and laboratory design. And as I mentioned, we had a lot of support from the National Science Foundation. They actually funded this conference, so we were very appreciative of their efforts to do this. No, this was all part of the workshop. So the workshop was funded by the NSF, and those four topics were part. We had breakout sessions so people were split up in those areas. So the workshop goals were identify safety challenges in research laboratories, and research laboratories do have unique challenges. Oftentimes, these research laboratories are basically discovering new compounds that we don't know what the hazards are. One good example is nanomaterials. You know, everyone's working with nanomaterials now, but the hazards associated with nanomaterials are not well characterized. And so, you know, that's one of the challenges. How do we prevent those exposures? I mean, Miriam talked about the radium. At one point, folks thought that was safe. And now the question is now we're working with nanomaterials, you know. So what are the precautions that we need to take with regard to nanomaterials? We wanted this to be a working group, so come up with some really achievable results at the end. So we really want to establish research priorities for the study of lab safety. We wanted to set research agendas. We actually wanted to determine what did they think was important for us to do research on. We actually, our funds are primarily to fund research. And so we wanted to get an idea from the participants, what did they think was important for us to fund as far as research projects. And finally, we wanted to bring this group together, which was selected based on a lot of different criteria. We were looking for people that were really interested in this area. We wanted to bring them together so that we could promote collaborations. And actually, we were able to do that, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. So some of the topics and challenges that were discussed at the conference were, how do we change attitudes? One of the big challenges, and I asked the question to Miriam, one of the big challenges in academia is this whole concept of academic freedom. You know, and folks that go into academia are a different animal than in other areas. You know, they believe in the freedom, academic freedom, and no one's going to tell them what to do and how to do it. You know, these are very bright people, and we don't want to stifle that creativity that they have, because that's how they discover these wonderful things, cures for all sorts of things, and new materials that change our lives. But how do we change the attitude so that they recognize that there are important things that they have to do to protect the health and safety of their researchers and themselves? Communication and management styles, and they're very different. And how do these affect research safety? And how do these affect attitudes in the laboratory and their operations? So that's one of the things that we talked about. We wanted data-driven performance metrics. That was really important to us, so that we can actually demonstrate that things actually work. Again, going back to the issue of researchers not believing that these things are actually going to have an impact. We wanted there to be data to demonstrate that these things actually work. And leadership and vision, and that was one of the things that was really important in order to affect this change. At UCLA, we're really fortunate in that our chancellor has been very engaged from the very beginning of this. This had a profound impact on him, as it did with the entire UCLA community, and he wanted to make sure that there was going to be change. And so we're fortunate at UCLA in that we do have leadership at the top. He actually goes on inspections with us. He actually attends training that we have to demonstrate to the other researchers that if he can find time to go to the training, they certainly can. He actually came to the very, very first training that we had we have mandatory training for all PIs, mandatory safety training. He was actually the first class. And that was really important to demonstrate to the others of the importance that he holds with regard to this training, and to demonstrate to them that they had to do this as well. So some of the challenges and opportunities. There's a fear of reporting incidents and near misses, and we all recognize that, and we have to change that. We want to establish a reward system. There often is a punishment system, particularly when things go awry and there's an accident and an injury, but there aren't really a whole lot of reward systems for folks that are actually operating their labs safely. We actually have laboratories that are inspected, and they have no findings, which is really rare, but it does happen. And there isn't a really good way to thank them for operating their laboratories very safely. So we want to try to figure out what is the best way to do that. What is the best reward system that we can develop? We want to improve safety education, and we want engagement at all levels. We want engagement from all the way from the PI, actually from the chancellor, but certainly in the laboratory, from the PI all the way down to the students that might be assisting. So with regard to safety culture, this is one of the breakout sessions. These are the top issues that were identified in safety culture. Leadership problems. Again, at UCLA we're fortunate, but I know for a fact that not all universities have their leadership behind them when it comes to this, or certainly not a high priority for them. Often there's inadequate training. I think we all recognize that, and you know, at UCLA our training numbers have increased exponentially. But I know that there are some of my colleagues really haven't increased the training, the laboratory safety training at their institutions. Much of this has to do with resource issues. Part of it is to do with, you know, people not looking at this as an important. A lot of folks look at this as a bureaucratic requirement that really isn't going to make improvements in their environment. I kind of look at it when I get those kinds of criticisms. I look at it as an operational thing. And we've had accidents that, fortunately, subsequent to this one, that haven't resulted in any major injuries, but that have, in fact, created disruptions in their operations. So they had to close the lab down. And so, obviously, there's some inefficiencies with that as well. I'm going to kind of go through this quickly because I don't have a lot of time. And funding for safety equipment. So I'm not going to go through the research proposals, but we actually developed at this conference research proposals that could actually be funded. And so these are some things, and if you guys, I don't know if this is going to be made available to everyone, but I think it is. You can actually go through the research proposals and see what they are. So some of the other safety topics that we discussed was chemical and other hazards. Some of the top issues were the lack of effective tools. There's inaccurate monitoring and control of chemical inventory. This is a big problem at UCLA. We have tens of thousands of chemicals, and we don't have a very effective, certainly not a centralized inventory. And these are all required to be inventoried by the individual laboratories. There's no clear effective method for dealing with hazardous materials. And there, again, inadequate safety training. This is a common theme throughout. Training is key. And again, some research proposals for that breakout session. And again, I'm not going to go through those, but again, take a look at the PowerPoint, and you'll get an idea of the things that were presented. So compliance issues. The top issues were the balance between academic independence and incentives. Absence of leadership, again, a common theme. Deficiencies of funding. There's been a huge decrease in funding, certainly at the federal level. And in fact, we had a position that was open for a staff research associate with the center, and we've got so many applications from researchers that are actually, their funding's drying up, and they're looking for other opportunities to stay in this field, but they have no funding, so they're losing their job. So we have so many of these folks that are looking for other work as a result of funding reductions, particularly in the federal government. Compliance procedures take too much time. I get this complaint all the time. They're constantly complaining about all of the training requirements, all the compliance requirements. It takes time away from their key interest, which is their research. SOPs, standard operating procedures, are missing, conflicting, or inadequate. And I'm going to talk a little bit about SOPs, some of the things that we're doing to help that process. Again, research proposals for this this breakout session, you can go through those. So laboratory design, another big issue, value engineering. I think we all, anyone who knows anything about laboratories, oftentimes during the course of the design and the build out of these facilities, there many key issues are value engineered out. Things such as break rooms. There's no break rooms. So where do people eat? So oftentimes they try to eat in their laboratories, and that was one of the things that Miriam pointed out from, 100 years ago, that the guy said, don't eat in the laboratory, and that's still a major issue now. But if we don't have a place for folks to eat their lunch or drink a cup of coffee, then what do they do? End users are not involved in lab design, and that's often the case. And there's no really consistent lab design manual with best practices. So we went through all of these things and we came up with these research proposals. And what are the next steps? Well, our proceedings have been accepted for publication in the Journal of Chemical Health and Safety. And we hope those will be published in the next few months. They're actually in press now. So we're really excited about that. There's another paper that I'm authoring that's going to be coming out, and it's been submitted for review, and it's undergoing peer review right now. It's really talking about UCLA's laboratory safety program and the changes that took place as a result of the accident. And we've made some significant improvements in our program, and so that paper is really going to describe what those improvements were and how that could be applicable to other research institutions. We want the center's website to actually be a clearinghouse for information. So we're linking it to articles related to laboratory safety. We've developed a lot of useful tools, and we want to put those on there. And we have lots of other materials on laboratory safety that are on there as well. We issued a request for proposals, and we got a number of really good proposals, and we actually awarded 4 proposals. So we did award seed funding for those grants. And we're really excited to get those underway. And we're hoping in the next year or so to actually have a subsequent workshop to actually go over the results of that. One thing I just want to talk about really briefly is that we've actually developed one of the tools as an SLP library. So if any of you are looking for SLPs for particular chemicals and processes, we actually have put together an SLP library. This says 550 SLPs developed. We're actually over 600 now. That is actually on UCLA's EH&S website. We also are putting it on the Center for Laboratory Safety. So that actually is a tool for researchers to actually use and actually have SLP templates that they use for hundreds of chemicals. And we're going to continue to do that for hundreds. And we're actually expecting to get over 1,000 SLPs that can be used. And that's just available to everyone. It's available to the public on our website. And one other thing I want to talk about just before I close is we actually worked in conjunction with a company called BioRaft in Boston, and also with the BioRaft, B-I-O-R-A-F-T, BioRaft Inc., and Nature Publishing Group. I think you probably all know Nature Magazine. We actually worked in collaboration with those three, and we developed a safety culture survey, and we're really excited about this. It was distributed to thousands of individuals. I don't know if any of you got it, but we sent it primarily to researchers. Basically, we sent it to tens of thousands of folks. We actually got a pretty good response. There were just under 2,400 responses from various countries. Majority of those countries were United States, but the European Union also had a significant number, and Asia and other countries also submitted them. And this is really going to provide a wealth of information about safety culture. We're really excited about this. There's going to be an article in Nature magazine about this survey coming out very soon, and we're going to be doing a lot of, the center is going to be doing a lot of research into the data responses, and we're going to be publishing some subsequent data as well. There's going to be some really interesting things coming out of that. And there's just a whole lot of people involved in this, and I just want to acknowledge the folks from EH&S and the advisory board, and again, the National Science Foundation are actually sponsoring the workshop. And if there are any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's certainly part of the discussion, but trust me. Well, there were union members there. There were graduate students that were there that are members of UPTI. So there were representatives. There weren't folks from the actual organizational structure of UPTI, but there were UPTI members there. Yeah. Okay, I'm not sure who that was, but we did have folks from the UAW. We had staff researchers that were actually part of the union that were members. So again, it wasn't part of the union leadership, but it was folks that were in the unions that were present. But it's a good comment, and I actually it's something that will, you know, in subsequent years when we do this in a year and a half or so, I'll consider that, and we'll look to get more people from perhaps UPTI involved in that. Well, I think well, HASCOM, you know, has certain requirements regarding that, so I can't imagine that she wouldn't be entitled to that information. So, I think it's very clear. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Absolutely, and you know, and I think that's a big deficiency as well. And I know there's some research into that as well. And we have a course that had gotten suspended at UCLA on chemical safety. It was actually a part of the academic requirements, and it had been suspended for a number of years, and it's actually been reinstated. So, but I agree. I think it should be requirements for anyone going through any kind of science, for anyone going through getting a science degree. You know, the chemical safety, biological safety, all of those things should be part of the curriculum. At UCLA, it's been re-implemented. I was actually very forceful about getting that re-implemented. And you know, at UCLA, it's an easier sell, but I know that in many other institutions, it's not, and it's very uncommon. It's not a very common thing. I'm aware of about a handful of institutions that actually have a chemical safety course for their undergraduates that's required. So certainly the folks that are actually in laboratories are required to do training, but it's not necessarily a four-credit training course. But again, at UCLA, we actually put that back into place. But I think it's a essential requirement. Yep. Well, yeah, Kalosha is obviously, I'm sure if you follow the case, they've been very involved in that. And many of you probably know that the UC system actually had a settlement with the Los Angeles District Attorney, and they put some requirements, many of which are just strictly you must comply with the law. Basically, they're saying you must comply. There are some additional things that we have to do above and beyond that. But, Kalosha, is very involved in that. I think we as an institution, just a research, just academia, just as an industry, I think we have not done a very good job. I really don't. And I think that we at UCLA were probably certainly no worse than others. I know we did inspections. We had a lab safety program. We had an active program. There are other institutions that don't have that, that didn't do that. And there's still institutions that don't inspect their laboratories. And major institutions, major research institutions, it often is a funding issue. And so I think that we were probably somewhere in the middle, maybe up towards the upper end, but certainly we were not doing everything that we could do. Now, I think what we've done now is we've actually set a standard that actually I'm very proud of, but we still have a ways to go. And part of that has to do with changing the culture that Miriam talked about, and that's a difficult thing. It's like cigarette smoking. Eventually, we've made some great strides in reducing the number of people smoking cigarettes, but it took decades, and I think that it will take years for us to really affect change to the point where we recognize it as a really strong safety culture. And we're making great strides. One example is our PPE compliance. When we first went in there, we found all kinds of people. After we put the policy in place, we found lots of people not wearing the proper PPE. The last times we've gone into our laboratories, we found no one out of compliance. And so, and these are all unannounced inspections. So we're pretty confident that we're actually making changes that are very positive. So, and I walk through the halls and I see these folks. And I see these folks wearing lab coats. And I see them wearing closed-toed shoes and long pants. And this is a sea change. This is 180 degrees change from what used to happen at UCLA. UCLA, the weather's great, and everyone's wearing shorts and flip-flops year-round. That doesn't happen anymore. Doesn't happen. Okay. I think we're done with questions. Thank you. Thank you very much.